content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the special section headline, Best Places to Work. Results are in. Workers have voted the 50 best places to work in the Triangle. There are a few newcomers in this year's list. And in this special section, we'll read the number one companies for each grouping and then come back at the end if we have more time. First, for small companies with 10 to 49 employees, number one, All American Entertainment. President, Craig Friedlander, headquarters, Durham, Industry Entertainment. 40 is the number of full-time employees in the Triangle, founded in 2002. What makes your company one of the best places to work? Well, this past year, we revamped our bonus structure, added more compensation to all employees, shortened work hours on Fridays, permanently adopted post-pandemic hybrid flexible work-from-home plan, and doubled paid paternity leave. What is the average minimum wage at your company? Salaries are commensurate with experience and include company-wide monthly and annual incentives. Name two benefits you offer that could be of interest to prospective employees. Every employee celebrates reaching the prior month's sales goals by spinning the wheel. The wheel has various dollar amounts, and based on the success of the month prior, these amounts are multiplied. Spins are paid out through bonusly points, allowing employees to purchase gift cards, take cash withdrawals, or donate their winnings. We also have a very active community support program called AAE Cares, empowering employees to support the causes that matter most to them. What is your policy on working in the office? In 2022, we permanently adopted a hybrid work environment where employees work from the office at least 2 days a week and remote the other days. This was so successful during the pandemic and popular with our employees that leadership made this temporary arrangement a permanent one. And number one in the medium companies, that's 40 to 99 employees, is Mattamy Homes, spelled M-A-T-T-A-M-Y. Top Triangle Executive, Bob Wiggins, Division President in Raleigh. Headquarters, Orlando, Florida. Industry, Residential Construction. 69 is the number of full-time employees in the Triangle, and the company was founded in 1978. List the accomplishments that propelled your company to being one of the best places to work in 2022. The unique combination of a culture of caring about our employees, customers, community, and the world around us with new opportunities for business and professional growth is what makes working at Mattamy Homes so special. The people at Mattamy love their work and find great purpose in what they do. As one employee said, "There is great satisfaction in assisting our customers with the biggest purchase of their lives. I love it." What is the average minimum wage at your company? $37.50. Name two benefits you offer that could be of interest to prospective employees. Mattamy closes offices and operations between Christmas and New Year's, giving employees this extra paid time off to spend with family and friends without having to sacrifice vacation time is an incredible benefit our employees rave about. Also, we spend a great deal of energy ensuring our culture of caring is experienced throughout the organization, including our commitment to Operation Coming Home, where annually Mattamy donates and builds a home for a wounded veteran. What is your policy on working in the office? Our work culture and business processes are significantly focused on collaboration and creative planning, which are best done together in person, and so our preferred approach is having our team in the office or out at job sites, as the case may be. Having said that, we put the health and safety of our employees first, and we do have a family-first mentality, and so are flexible to meet the needs of individual employees as required. And for large companies with 100 to 249 employees, the number one company is Pinnacle Financial Partners. Top Triangle Executive, Mark Carlton, Regional President. Headquarters, Nashville, Tennessee. Industry, banking. 132 full-time employees in the Triangle and founded in 2000. List the accomplishments that propelled your company to being one of the best places to work in 2022. continued growth by hiring 19 experienced financial professionals in the Triangle in the past year. Our Culture Club, Diversity and Inclusion Council, and Wellness Champions led a myriad of activities such as fitness challenges, cultural awareness events and celebrations, group community volunteer projects, and family events like a night at the Durham Bulls. Our diversity and inclusion focus centered on recruitment, awareness, and respect for all individuals and developing leaders of all backgrounds. What is the average minimum wage at your company? Our minimum wage for hourly associates is $15 per hour. Name two benefits you offer that could be of interest to prospective employees. Every Pinnacle associate is eligible for annual cash incentives, which are based on firm-wide financial targets rather than individual goals that typically only reward a few people. Pinnacle has a flat organizational structure that appeals to potential associates. Our structure achieves less bureaucracy, easy access to leaders, and greater efficiency. Market leaders in the Triangle, not someone many states away, are the decision makers, which makes it easier and faster to serve clients. What is your policy on working in the office? Associates in our retail offices will continue to be in the office to serve clients face-to-face. With all other teams, it is up to the leader and team to determine whether a hybrid remote in-office schedule works without negatively impacting associate engagement and the delivery of exceptional client service. And finally, we have our extra large companies with 250 plus employees. The number one company is Pendo. CEO Todd Olson, headquarters Raleigh, industry software technology, 500 full-time employees in the Triangle, and founded in 2013. List the accomplishments that propelled your company to being one of the best places to work in 2022. A major accomplishment was how we were able to keep morale high while nearly doubling in size in 2021. We've maintained high ENPS scores by focusing on inclusion and belonging through affinity groups and office experiences, providing career growth opportunities, learning and development, salary benchmarking, and expanding our benefits packages to include mental health, wellness, and fertility benefits. We also have continued to provide every employee with equity in the company. What is the average minimum wage at your company? $26.28. Name two benefits you offer that could be of interest to prospective employees. We're proud to offer our employees a wide range of flexible benefits. These benefits include mental health care from Modern Health, wellness from Forma, and fertility from Carrot. We also have a new headquarters in downtown Raleigh that is designed for collaboration and connection with an in-house coffee shop, pizza oven, and speakeasy where we hold lots of events and gatherings. What is your policy on working in the office? We do not have a strict return-to-office plan. Employees are now starting to gauge what they feel most comfortable with after 2 years of working from home. Employees who reside near a Pendo office hub and are comfortable coming into the office are encouraged to do so weekly, giving them the opportunity to connect with new coworkers, share a meal together, and collaborate in person. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings in the Triangle Business Journal. This is written by Managing Editor Dane Huffman. Townhouse uproar. Raleigh's Hayes Barton neighborhood is in an uproar over a proposal to build 17 townhouses, an issue foreshadowing more ahead as the city tries to balance growth while maintaining the neighborhoods that make it so desirable. Concept 8 Holdings, LLC, plans to demolish a house at 908 Williamson Drive that dates to 1925. The project became possible after the city amended the zoning code in 2021 to create missing middle housing, allowing more townhomes and duplexes, but neighbors erupted and Save Our Neighborhood signs shot up. I understand and appreciate how people feel like that's a massive or radical change, says Patrick Young, the city's director of planning and development, but it's exactly the kind of incremental or gentle change we need to accommodate new residences. Opponents say the changes happened with little public input. Young says the city was transparent about the move, but the pandemic muted the conversation. Opponents, such as Frank Gordon, also noted developers are not required to provide notice or get input, and more developments could follow. It's not just our neighborhood, Gordon says. It's all across the board, and I think most people don't have the slightest idea that this has happened. The development team's Johnny Chappell says the plan remains to do 17 townhomes in the $2 million range, and the group does want to engage neighbors in the fall. Our intent is to build something that looks like it's been in Hayes Barton for decades, he says. Young notes the city has to find ways to accommodate new neighbors in the beautiful communities they want to be in. He adds, I don't think there is anything out of character about the 17 beautiful townhouses. Gordon isn't convinced. He acknowledges Raleigh needs more apartments and condominiums, but says, we don't have to build those densely populated structures in the middle of our neighborhoods. We just don't have to. Inspiration for Dirty Dancing goes up in flames. Grossinger's Hotel, the inspiration for Dirty Dancing's Kellerman's Resort, is gone. Located in New York's Catskills, the hotel was largely abandoned, but once drew thousands of vacationers, including Eleanor Bergstein, writer and producer of Dirty Dancing. The Liberty Fire Department spent hours fighting the fire, which is under investigation. The movie's actual location still stands. Despite its New York setting, the film was shot in North Carolina and Virginia. Western North Carolina's Lake Lure was the location for scenes like Baby carrying the watermelon and practicing on the stone stairs and Baby and Johnny's famous Time of My Life dance. The Lake Lure Inn and Spa, where Patrick Swayze and Jennifer Grey stayed during filming, is still operating and open to the public. Aunt B's ex-home might become B&B. A Siler City home that was the longtime residence of a star of the Andy Griffith Show could wind up as a bed and breakfast with a Mayberry theme. Frances Bavier, who portrayed Aunt B on the show, retired to Siler City after visiting from time to time for celebrations of the show. She moved to the city in 1972 and bought a three-story brick home at 503 West Elk. The home is now owned by Kathy Nail, who, like Bavier, came to Siler City from Los Angeles. Nail is in the process of upgrading the large house and weighing options on what to do with it. She told the Chatham News and Record that a B&B might make sense, or even some sort of museum. Nail has also been hearing all about Bavier, who kept a low profile before dying in 1989. She was very nice to everyone, Nail told the Chatham News and Record. It's people who came up to bother her that made her cranky. There were times she just didn't like to be bothered. Sports Endeavors scores investment. A Hillsboro sports company has scored major backing. Sports Endeavors Incorporated, which is behind retail sites Soccer.com and WorldSoccerShop.com, among other brands, has secured a majority investment from Seawall Capital LLC of Austin, Texas. The company is betting that the global sport of soccer will continue to grow its footprint in the U.S., which is slated to host the 2026 World Cup, along with Mexico and Canada. Financial details were not disclosed, but Seawall says its target investment is typically between $25 million and $100 million. Sports Endeavor was founded in Durham in the 1980s by brothers Mike and Brendan Moylan, who launched the Eurosport catalog with a mailing list of 6,000 that eventually grew to 1 million subscribers. Selma Food Hall finally set to open. After delays brought on by COVID-19, the Old North State Food Hall is set to finally open August 26. The food hall is located within the sprawling Eastfield development that plans to bring 3 million square feet of industrial, retail, commercial, and housing space to Johnston County. The concept will bring a nearly a dozen new restaurants to Selma, ranging from Mexican food to pizza to gourmet macaroni and cheese. Old North State Food Hall is being managed by Hospitality HQ, a firm led by Chef Akhtar Nawab. And finally, RTP-based CRO expands in Texas. Leaning into trends in drug development, a mid-sized contract research organization based in Research Triangle Park is expanding its ability to work with companies focused on more complex therapeutics. Worldwide Clinical Trials announced August 23 a 15,000-square-foot expansion of its bioanalytical center in Austin, Texas, to create a lab dedicated to working with large molecule drugs like biologics. This area of drug development, which includes cell and gene therapies, is rapidly increasing. Our expanded capacity is vital to the development of large molecule products such as vaccines, blood products, and gene and cellular therapies for patients, says Mike Menser, an executive president and general manager at Worldwide. And now we turn to our continuing series, 52 Shades of Success, Earth and Equity. The headline, Paying It Forward. In an industry where annual wages rarely top $30,000, Charles Epps works to help his employees build financial knowledge. about this project. The Earth and Equity Project explores the growing awareness, actions, and accountability of businesses and leaders who face opportunities and challenges related to environmental, social, and governance, or ESG, issues. The 52-week project will highlight what selected companies and Triangle executives are doing to address climate change, diversity, equity, inclusion, and ways to maneuver the new world of corporate responsibilities. Story by Connie Gentry. Charles Epps is determined that every employee in his company has money for groceries, rent, or light bills, even if it means he writes a check for a loan. At DeWitt Facility Services, business is up over 9% year over year, revenue is circling around $3.8 million, and the size of the workforce has nearly tripled since he acquired the company in 2015 and stepped into the role of CEO. But the number he's most proud to talk about is the roughly $7.8 million he's paid to employees over the past 7 years. I've been very grateful to be able to touch people's pockets and put that money into African-American communities and minority communities. That means money gets generated throughout the community, and my goal is to get it higher so everybody prospers, Epp says. In the facility services industry, as with most labor-intensive hourly jobs, prosperity is not a characteristic typically associated with the workforce. There are more than 2.2 million janitorial and cleaning jobs around the country, and the median hourly wage for those positions in 2021 was $14.31. And the demand for workers continues to climb. The Bureau of Labor Statistics projects that about 315,000 openings for janitors and building cleaners will occur each year, but wages are barely keeping workers above the poverty line. For instance, the Department of Health and Human Services has defined the poverty threshold for a family of four at $27,750. And last year, the U.S. median annual wage for janitors and building cleaners was $29,760. The average annual wage for janitors and cleaning staff is precipitously close to the poverty line in the Triangle as well. In Raleigh, the annual wage is $28,020, while in Durham, it's slightly higher at $32,520. The competitive edge that has throttled his business ahead has been Epps' ability to recruit and retain staff, even in an industry with a low pay scale. The company, which has grown from around 40 employees in 2015 to about 150, added more than 20 employees within the last year. Our growth in revenue and business is predicated on the lack of employees other companies are experiencing, Epps explains. More companies are outsourcing facility services because they can't find people to hire. People think this labor shortage started when COVID happened, but we saw it start in this industry before the pandemic. A range of industries are represented in DeWitt's client roster, including AstraZeneca, Centennial Campus at NC State University, the Durham County Administrative Building, Go Durham Facilities, the American Board of Pediatrics in Chapel Hill, and Namaco in Zebulon, as well as Lockheed Martin and the Center for Manufacturing Innovation in Greenville, South Carolina. Epps, who started with the company when it was owned by Charles Whitner and based outside Greenville, South Carolina, decided to buy the company and move it to Durham, his hometown, primarily because of the associates it employed. Some of us have been here 20 years, and having people who've been here that long helps attract new people. But the most important thing is showing people you sincerely care about them. Even if the job doesn't pay more than the person down the street, if you treat somebody good and you're flexible with them, they'll stay with you, he says. If they've been with our company 6 months and have a good record, then we have an incentive to help them if they're having a hard time. One of the creative ways he's looking to help his employees is with money management. We're going to implement a program with Truist and have one of their bankers come do sessions on finance and banking with our employees. If people don't know money or don't know anything about credit or have a bad spending habit and don't know how to control money, I don't care if they make $100,000 a year. They've still got to learn how to manage money, Epp says. We want to help employees know how to get a loan, to buy a car, or save for a home. Truist has a number of programs and resources that help businesses support the financial well-being of employees. Although they couldn't comment about specific clients or upcoming projects with DeWitt, Chris Bell, regional president for Truist Triangle Region, shared his perspective on working with the small businesses. Businesses are most successful when their employees are able to achieve both physical and financial wellness. When we can help employees gain the confidence they need to take charge of their finances and their future, it's a win for the employee and the employer. Another way DeWitt builds employee confidence and loyalty is by allowing employees the flexibility to pursue educational opportunities and obtain professional certifications. I've sent 5 of my employees to school, and even if it means me losing them to something better, I've accomplished a goal because I helped make them better, Epp says. The company has also enabled 2 of its employees to become first-time Habitat for Humanity homeowners, and DeWitt's management team has earned the Cleaning Industry Management Standard, or CIMS, Green Building Certification. Whenever possible, the company uses green cleaning products, although Epp says, "The sad thing is green products won't always work, especially in the manufacturing sector, so we have to use something a little harsher. For the most part, we try to always use products that are biodegradable. It's a lot about education with the client, helping them understand when they can replace less sustainable products with a product that is green, and we do handle recycling to a degree for our clients. We monitor how the recycling is being done and make sure the different bins for plastics, for cardboard, are used properly. Mostly we try to let clients know what the pros and cons are. Really, the only con is that some people think recycling is too much work, but they haven't looked at the environmental issues." And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Retail and Restaurants page, written by Laura Brumette. Kumar weighs future as Garland closes. Garland has ranked as one of Raleigh's best restaurants since 2013. Garland, a popular restaurant serving Indian and Asian dishes with a southern twist, will be closed at the end of August. The restaurant is owned by Chef Chidi Kumar, a 2-time James Beard Awards finalist and rock musician, and her husband, Paul Seiler. The restaurant's last day will be August 27. Garland is located at 14 West Martin Street in a 3-story building owned by the couple. The pair opened King's, a music venue, and Neptune's, a bar, on the top and bottom floors, respectively, in 2010. Garland opened on the street-level middle floor in 2013. "This is a 3-layer space that needs updating and reinvention," Kumar says. "We need time to make that happen and focus energy and resources on moving forward." The building was purchased in 1999 for $260,000. It was built in 1925 and measures about 12,000 square feet, according to Wake County property records. Kumar says the pair is not ready to announce whether they intend to keep the property. Kumar and Seiler's next venture will be through a partnership with Anisette Sweet Shop. The bakery and coffee shop is located at 209 Bickett Boulevard, north of downtown, off Capitol Boulevard, though the space is currently under renovation. When that construction is complete, the team will be unveiling a collaborative concept later in the year. In the meantime, Kumar and Seiler are planning pop-up dinners, shows, and other events in the Martin Street space. "Operating on Martin Street for more than a decade and being an important part of downtown Raleigh has brought us more joy and fulfillment than we could have dreamed," the couple said in a statement. "We are proud and excited to remain a part of Raleigh's community of local independent entrepreneurship that sets our city apart from so many." Garland is known as one of the colorful and innovative establishments that helped build the restaurant industry's reputation in downtown Raleigh. New development to replace restaurant. St. James Seafood will be closing in early October. Owner and chef Matt Kelly shared the news online, citing the termination of their lease as the reason. Records with the city of Durham show site plans have been submitted for 806 West Main Street and neighboring parcels for a development totaling 234,000 square feet. A description says the project will consist of retail and office space with associated parking garage, utilities, culvert rerouting, and bus stop. Asana Partners, a Charlotte-based commercial real estate firm, owns the property. The building was built in 1925. Asana also owns the Brightleaf Square mixed-use development nearby. The lease termination is the latest in a string of difficulties the restaurant has faced. A natural gas explosion in April 2019 forced St. James to close. The restaurant reopened on January 23, 2020, but closed 39 days later due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Nebraska firm to open Raleigh office. Nebraska's HDR, a firm specializing in engineering, architecture, and environmental and construction services, now has architects in Raleigh. HDR ranks in the top 5 nationally for its design services, with design revenue in 2021 of $2.5 billion. The firm has had an engineering office in Raleigh since 1997. The office, located in the Charter Square building on Fayetteville Street, will now house the architecture studio. The company will have about 2 dozen architecture employees based in Raleigh. Currently, a team of 12 people, The office is led by Michelle McNutt, healthcare principal, and Tim Winstead, education and science principal. And in a section called He Said It, we have a quote from John Norwood on his appointment as National Manager for Materials Technology and Innovation at Terracon. The firm's Raleigh office, where NC State University graduate Norwood is based, has 100 employees. I'm passionate about connecting people with technology in ways that make our jobs better. And finally, a big number, number two. That's where Raleigh ranked on Labor Day weekend for travel, according to Airbnb. The city had the second most number of nights reserved among U.S. cities for the holiday weekend, a result of local work to make Raleigh more attractive to leisure travelers. And now we turn to the On Aviation Tech page, written by Lauren Onisorge. RDU looks to entice future flights, airport using incentives to land markets it wants most. By pulling the trigger on its latest incentives package, Raleigh-Durham International Airport hopes to lure additional service, including new international routes. The Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority, at its August meeting, approved an air service development program in order to entice airlines to launch or expand operations at RDU. The program includes incentives, a familiar strategy for the airport, and one that has been successful in the past. Iceland Air, which started service earlier this year to the Iceland capital of Reykjavik, was lured in part by rebates offered by the airport. An RDU spokesperson confirms a planned Bahamas Air flight to Freeport in the Bahamas that starts in November will be in line for incentives from the new policy, which prioritizes international service. The policy earmarks a maximum of up to $500,000 in marketing support for the first year of a flight's operation and 100% landing and facility fee rebates. A spokesman says it is not yet clear what exactly Bahamas Air could get for its new flight. The policy outlines what it calls target markets for RDU. In terms of domestic service, that's unserved routes in Oregon, California, Washington, and Puerto Rico. Under the Americas category, the airport is prioritizing nonstops to Alaska, Hawaii, Mexico, Panama, and Vancouver. Specific international markets are not listed in the policy, but documents suggest more European destinations are likely a top priority. Brett Snyder, founder of airline industry blog Cranky Flyer, says incentives are a regular practice across the sector. The ideal program focuses on routes that the airport believes can be successful on their own, but need a boost to lure the airline in the first place and to help demand ramp up, he said. The problem arises when incentives are used to get new service that's not likely to succeed when the money runs out, so it can result in wasted money just to get temporary service. Truist deal for Durham Tech is good sign for local entrepreneurs. Truist Financial Corporation did not set out to buy Durham data technology firm Zaloni. Tracy Daniels, chief data officer for Truist, was considering ways the firm could use Zaloni's analytics software. But meanwhile, Truist venture arm was circling in on a buyout. Both discussions merged, and on August 22nd, Truist announced it was acquiring assets of the company founded by entrepreneurs Ben Sharma and Bajoy Bora in 2007. Sharma is part of a team joining Truist with the deal, which includes the entire Zaloni Arena platform used by Fortune 100 companies to securely deliver data for advanced analytics. The company had nearly 50 local employees pre-pandemic, but just 20 are joining Truist. The deal does signal continued interest in innovation by the banking sector. Chris Marinak, director of research for Janney Montgomery Scott, expects to see more deals. I believe that it's a fair expectation for the rest of 2022 and also 2023, Marinak says of M&A. More data deals are likely. Most are small in size relative to the buying bank's market capitalization. RDU flight to Iceland extended. Iceland Air is doubling down on its investment at Raleigh-Durham International Airport due to strong ticket sales. That's according to airport CEO Mike Landguth, speaking during the regular meeting of the Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority for August. Iceland Air debuted at RDU in May with a nonstop flight to the capital, Reykjavik. The flight, initially envisioned as taking off through October, is now selling tickets for November through January, Landguth said. The plan is still to fly 4 days a week. International trade in North Carolina roaring back. Through June, state exports are up 20.8% compared to last year, according to data provided by the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina. North Carolina's top exports by year, 2019, $34.3 billion worth, 2020, $28.5 billion, 2021, $33.5 billion, and for January to June 2022, already at $19.6 billion. North Carolina's top export partners as of June, Canada, $3.8 billion, China, $3.1 billion, Mexico, $2.6 billion, France, $801 million, and Singapore, $545.3 million. And finally, we have a section called He Said It, featuring Greg Lowe, Wolfspeed CEO, speaking to analysts on a recent earnings call about how the company is in talks with a number of different states and local authorities on a new materials factory. We're looking at a new facility that we hope we can make some sort of decision on post-haste. And now we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page, written by Evan Hoopfer. More new homes coming to Clayton. Town annexes land for nearly 800 new homes, apartments. A Clayton development that will bring nearly 800 new residences to the town took a major step forward recently. The land on which Ashcroft Section 2 will be built was annexed into Clayton during its town council meeting August 15. The 221 acres are located at the intersection of Covered Bridge Road and the Neuse River on the northeast side of town. River Wild, based in Clayton and led by Reed Smith, is the developer behind the project. This community represents one of the largest housing projects in Johnston County. Plans call for 293 single-family units, 299 townhome units, and 180 apartment units. Also, the company plans to have an area dedicated for up to 105,000 square feet of commercial space. Another of Smith's companies, 127 Homes, is the home builder on the project, and Jacqueline Smith Properties is handling the sales. We're excited to provide this much-needed variety of shelter options for families in Johnston County, says Hannah Smith, a River Wild spokesperson. This project has been years in the making. Smith says site work has already begun on Ashcroft Section 2, and the goal is to start vertical construction in spring 2023, weather permitting. She says it's not yet known what the price range will be for the homes. New Southern Pines apartments see rents blow past $2,000 a month. Southern Pines recently approved plans for a new luxury apartment complex that will have rents similar to the Triangle's big cities. The Lux at Morganton Park will have 90 units, comprised of 18 one-bedroom units, 54 two-bedroom units, and 18 three-bedroom units. The apartment complex will sit off Morganton Road next to the current Legends at Morganton Park Apartments, a 288-unit complex. Cavinus and Cates, based in Fayetteville, is the developer for both complexes. Casey King, director of accounting for the company, says site work for the Lux development has begun, and the projected timeline is for residents moving in toward the end of 2023. Cavinus and Cates is investing between $16 million and $17 million to build the complex. King says the projected rent range for the apartments will be $1,500 to $2,200 a month. Roxborough approves 400 new homes. Roxborough rezoned about 150 acres on Billy Hicks Road on the south side of the city to R8 during a city council meeting this month. The zoning classification allows for the development of home lots with a minimum size of 8,000 square feet. Tom White of Axiom Development estimates the project would contain over 400 new single-family homes with a price range in the 300,000s. The proximity to Durham makes it appealing for a lot of people, he says. You still have a lot of the amenities of the large towns without the large city taxes that come with Durham, and you can get that small town feel with Roxborough. And in a section called He Said It, a quote from Anger Mayor Bob Smith on the town's development strategy for the West Side, where the NC Department of Transportation is building a new bypass for NC Highway 55. We've set up all along the bypass for commercial. If you do residential proposals, you have to have commercial. And finally, a big number, 163. How many homes are being planned in a new subdivision called Camden Place in Anger by home builder Taylor Morrison? And now we turn to the On Healthcare Higher Ed page, written by Zach Ezone. Bed battle heats up as Wake County grows. UNC, Duke, Wake Med are all looking for expansion or for permission to expand. Local health systems are again competing for new hospital beds in Wake County. Duke Health, UNC Health, and Wake Med have all submitted proposals to the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services to supply the county with the additional 45 acute care beds it needs, as outlined in the 2022 State Medical Facilities Plan. Wake Med unveiled its proposal publicly August 15. Plans include a $214 million project to develop the beds and two operating rooms at a facility in Garner. The health system plans to build the acute care hospital on 27 acres near White Oak Road and Timber Drive East. If approved, construction on that project would begin by fall 2024, with an opening date in fiscal year 2027. While not part of the same certification of need process, Wake Med also unveiled its proposal for a 150-bed mental health hospital in eastern Wake County. That is a $142 million project that would employ between 225 to 260 people. Shortly after Wake Med's announcement, UNC Health outlined its proposals in an email to the Triangle Business Journal. The health system has submitted Certificate of Need applications to the state to add the acute care beds and operating rooms to existing facilities for a combined $23.2 million. UNC Health Rex is proposing a much more cost-effective plan to add capacity at our existing hospitals and meet increasing demand across Wake County. UNC Health spokesperson Alan Wolf said, "We believe our proposal will better serve future generations of patients across our fast-growing region." The system is proposing adding two operating rooms to its UNC Health Rex Hospital in Raleigh at the cost of $2.6 million. The operating rooms would occupy space on the second floor of the main operating room surgical suite. Additionally, UNC Health has proposed developing 36 acute care beds in existing space at the main patient tower of the Raleigh Hospital. Most of the beds would be located on the east wing of the facility's sixth floor, while four beds would occupy space on the fourth floor that was vacated when UNC Health Rex built the North Carolina Heart and Vascular Hospital. Gore-Tex maker buys Duke University spin-out focused on dialysis. A medical device startup with deep ties to Duke University has been acquired by a global materials science company. Delaware-based W.L. Gore & Associates has acquired Duke spin-out Innovasc Medical, which is developing an arteriovenous graft technology for patients with end-stage renal disease. Financial terms of the deal were not disclosed. Innovasc was formed in 2013 by Duke surgeons and scientists who experienced firsthand the need for a device to improve care for patients with kidney failure who use grafts for dialysis treatments. The device, first developed by Jeffrey Lawson and Sean Gage in Duke's School of Medicine, is intended to reduce the risk of complications and bleeding from repeated dialysis treatments. The device is being evaluated in clinical trials. Innovasc CEO Joe Knight says the Durham company is close to completing study enrollment for the device, a process that Gore & Associates will lead following the acquisition. Knight, the company's first full-time employee in 2015, will remain involved as consultant. Gore says it generates annual revenue of $4.5 billion and employs more than 12,000 in more than 25 offices throughout the world. In addition to the medical field, the company manufactures products in various categories. Pharma gets NASDAQ extension. A clinical stage pharmaceutical company in Morrisville has additional time to avoid its stock being delisted from the NASDAQ as the firm looks for additional sources of capital. A recent extension gives Tenax Therapeutics until early next year to regain compliance with the NASDAQ rule that establishes a minimum bid price for listed companies. The company is evaluating its options for regaining compliance, which includes potentially implementing a reverse stock split, according to securities filings. The stock closed at 26 cents on August 23rd. And in a section called He Said It, a quote from Jeff Wolf, CEO of Nighthawk Biosciences, on creating subsidiaries to develop drugs to fight infectious diseases. "We're really aiming to be a biodefense machine. This is truly a fully integrated effort where we can develop and manufacture vaccines and therapeutics all in-house." And finally, a big number, $109 million. That's how much Greenlight Biosciences, a Boston-area biotechnology company with a growing footprint in Research Triangle Park, has received through a private placement with institutional investors. The company is developing its ribonucleic acid, or mRNA, technology for products in humans and plant health. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Kaylee Thompson. Hotel dropped in Warehouse District. Hoffman's plans for bus station now show more apartments. A major development moving forward in downtown Raleigh appears to have made a change. Hoffman & Associates and Go Triangle, the developers behind the Raleigh Union Bus Station, RUS Bus, have submitted updated site plans for the mixed-use project at the corner of Southwest and West Hargett Streets in the Warehouse District. The new plans show zero hotel units, indicating a hotel is no longer part of the two-tower development. Site plans filed last year called for a residential tower and a hotel in another tower, but the updated plans published this month on the city's website show 587 apartment units and no hotel units. The site plan submitted last year included around 200 hotel rooms. Hoffman & Associates, based in Washington, D.C., hasn't commented on the status of the hotel portion of the development. The new site plan says the development, now estimated to cost $275 million, will offer 460 one-bedroom units and 127 two-bedroom units. The project, located at 206 and 210 Southwest Street, next to Raleigh Union Station, will be a single-building high-rise development with a bus transit facility and four levels of structured parking. One tower will have 33 floors and the other 17 floors with retail space as well. Site plans for the development will have 702,000 square feet of space. The parking structure has not changed as it features four floors of 608 proposed parking spaces. The bus transit facility and retail space are both still included in the latest site plans. The bus facility will include a pedestrian bridge to Union Station, plus bike and pedestrian-friendly spaces. Hoffman & Associates is prioritizing the Raleigh area as a growth market with two big projects downtown: the company's Seaboard Station development, not to be confused with a separate development happening on the site of the Seaboard train station, is under construction. The Seaboard Station project will include three residential buildings totaling almost 600 units and 130,000 square feet of street-level retail, restaurants, and entertainment. A hotel and underground parking are planned as well. $150 million development adds affordable housing. A large residential development in Durham will add much-needed affordable housing units to a long-time community. KDM Development Corporation and Kelly Development are partnering on a project with 821 total units in the Bragtown community in North Durham. Of that amount, 198 units will be multifamily affordable housing developed by Kelly, 384 will be market-rate multifamily units, and 239 will be market-rate single-family townhomes developed by KDM. The project is located along Carver Street and Cub Creek Road, north of Old Oxford Road. It will cost just over $100 million to develop the market-rate side and $48 million to develop the affordable housing side. Kelly Principal Ted Heilbron says they will break ground on the affordable housing units in early 2023, and it will take 18 months to complete. Remake of Tower Shopping Center planned. A Raleigh developer is in the beginning stages of design and planning for a major mixed-use development along New Bern Avenue, just outside the Beltline. Atlas Stark owns seven parcels totaling almost 23 acres and plans to develop multifamily housing, offices, retail, restaurants, and hospitality as growth comes to the key corridor, according to managing partner Gabriel Gios. Atlas Stark wants to rezone the lots from a three-story height limit to a 20-story limit. The area is currently a shopping center with an inn, restaurants, and surface parking lots. The company acquired the property known as Tower Shopping Center for $5.8 million in early 2021. And in a section called New Role, Foundry Commercial hired Sarah Godwin from JLL as Senior Vice President of Land Services on August 1st to be based in the Raleigh office. In 15 years in the industry, she has been part of more than $840 million in land transactions and more than $5 billion in institutional investment advisory transactions. And finally, a big number. $41 million. That's how much profit Westbrook Partners made in a year after selling an apartment complex in Morrisville to NexPoint of Dallas. NexPoint purchased the 298-unit Bainbridge Aviation Crossing for $120 million in late July, approximately $400,000 per unit. Florida-based Westbrook paid $79 million for the apartment complex in 2021. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Few Options for Businesses That Haven't Raised Money. When ride-sharing giant Uber was valued during its public stock offering in 2019, it stood at a stunning $82 billion. The company's current valuation is about $45 billion. European startup darling Klarna's, a buy-now-pay-later tech firm, peak valuation last year was about $45 billion. In July, the market cap was pegged at $6 billion. Hundreds of examples like these in the marketplace have spooked the capital markets. As a result, money is hard to come by, and if companies are interested in investing in deals, the pre-money valuation has nosedived. While that may be true for the startup, fintech, crypto, and tech concerns, this dilatory environment is also seeping its way to professional services, commercial and industrial real estate, and manufacturing and life science sectors. And once again, we find ourselves at a place we have been before when nervousness and financial uneasiness point to the only remaining safe haven for companies, cash. If companies have cash on their balance sheet, they are now stronger than ever. These companies will soon be able to buy competitors and other firms to expand their product and services. Just looking at some of the numbers, it seems like money is evaporating from the system, from venture capital, IPO, and standard capital markets. That's not to say that there is no money available, as dry powder exists in pockets for companies who may already have adjusted their operations and cash burn rate to push through this contraction. In 2021, for example, the amount of money pumped into tech startups was astronomical, $330 billion. Coatue, an investment crossover fund, estimates that $1.4 trillion found its way into growth companies last year, with half coming from the venture capital industry and the remainder through the IPO market. While the early part of 2022 started strong, by almost all accounts, things have tightened up significantly. The same is true for banks and other financial institutions that play in the middle market space, infusing growth capital for companies to expand and buy real estate, equipment, and often other companies. On paper, financial companies will assert they continue to make loans, but acknowledge the bar is getting higher with every passing month. And almost unanimously, from Bank of America's Brian Moynihan to Chase's Jamie Dimon, ongoing actions from the Federal Reserve are transforming the financial environment. Higher interest rates will flow through to the cost of business loans from lenders, including national, regional, and community banks, as well as the federal government loan initiatives such as 7A and 504 programs. So if companies are running low on cash, options to carry on as a viable operation has dwindled considerably. Among the options that still remain include a big down round in terms of pre-money valuation, merging with another company, and finally, having the ability to reduce expenses by streamlining product flows and cutting the workforce. We already see layoffs spreading across tech companies, but now layoffs are spilling over to other companies. Large companies such as Best Buy, Ford Motor, Peloton, Remax, and Walmart already have announced layoffs. Will this ease the labor woes for companies looking to add workers? Without a doubt. If the capital markets continue to tighten the spigots, the labor market will look far different by the end of the year, and that may be one of the few encouraging signs for the economy. And now we turn to general news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. First, we have a story written by Zach Ezone. Durham Eye Drop Company sold for $770 million. A Durham pharmaceutical company developing eye drop solutions is being acquired by a global company for around $770 million. Through the deal, Switzerland-based Alcon is adding two commercial products owned by Aerie Pharmaceuticals to its portfolio, while Aerie will receive the financial backing of a multi-billion-dollar company. Alcon is the right strategic and financial partner to maximize the potential of Aerie's commercial franchise and our growing portfolio of pipeline assets, Aerie CEO Raj Kanan says. Alcon, with over $8 billion in revenue, develops and sells eye care products such as implants and contact lenses. It acquired Aerie at a purchase price of $15.25 per share, representing a premium of 37%. The sale follows a period where Aerie went through significant changes at the executive level. Kanan joined the company in December, a few months after the previous CEO, Vicente Anito, was terminated without cause, according to a securities filing. A month after Kanan arrived, the company parted ways with its chief operating officer and its chief research and development officer. The sale is expected to close in the fourth quarter. Whether Aerie will remain based in Durham is unclear. Alcon's U.S. base of operations is in Fort Worth, Texas, and the company also has a campus outside Atlanta. Aerie, with over 300 employees, has two eye drop solutions called Ropressa and Rocklatin, launched in the U.S. in 2018 and 2019, respectively, that make up its glaucoma franchise. The company generated net revenue from product sales of $33.3 million during the second quarter of 2022, up about 23% from the same time last year. The company estimates revenue for these products to reach between $130 million and $140 million this year. Loss of Centene HQ reflects new reality. Centene drops plan to put thousands of workers in new Charlotte location. This is written by Eric Spanberg, Charlotte Business Journal. The Charlotte Business Journal broke the news August 16 that Fortune 50 healthcare company Centene Corporation is dropping a planned East Coast headquarters in Charlotte's University City that would have brought 3,200 to 6,000 jobs and a minimum investment of $1 billion. When the agreement was announced in July 2020, the accompanying $450 million incentives package from the state and local government was the largest in North Carolina history. St. Louis-based Centene cited a pandemic-spurred cultural change as the reason for the change in plans. 90% of the company's employees work from home or are in virtual office hybrid, and Centene sees that as the standard arrangement going forward. While the Centene news surprised many because of the scope of the investment, the decision embodies the continuing adjustment to work life post-pandemic. Christopher Chung, head of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, says that this type of reckoning will be with us for at least the next couple of years as companies and their workers figure out what they want and what's most efficient. Chung says that prior to COVID, his group's recruiting broke down like this. 70% of prospects were industrial, including manufacturing, food processing, distribution, and data centers, while 30% were office-based projects. Now, the ratio is 95% industrial and 5% office. Will it come back? Chung asks. That's the question. And that shift means an overwhelming majority of prospects are looking for suburban, exurban, and rural sites, not cities. Chung acknowledges the change as well as lingering uncertainty, noting that commercial real estate investors and developers, as well as urban downtown leaders, are grappling with such questions in a constant, visceral way. From commercial real estate to transit investments, the societal shifts underway will carry significant influence, he adds. And we have a story from the Triad Business Journal. South Carolina firm buys Triad chain and lands deal in Triangle. A Greensboro-based convenience store chain has been sold to a South Carolina-based company that is making a broader push in North Carolina with a pending deal in the Triangle. Premier Stores Incorporated, the chain operated by President Phil Kleinman under the Great Stops brand, has sold its assets, including six Triad area locations, to Refuel Operating Company, LLC of Charleston, South Carolina. Terms of the transaction were not disclosed. While Great Stop stores feature Little Caesars or Subway restaurants as well as 24-hour laundromats, it was not immediately known if those assets were part of the transaction. Also unknown is if Phil Kleinman retains ownership of six freestanding Little Caesars he has operated in the Triangle and Triad. Refuel said in its announcement August 22 that its acquisition of Great Stops closed August 2nd. and said that it also entered into an agreement to acquire the assets of the Whalen Corporation, a Raleigh-based convenience store chain with three stores in the Triangle market. That deal, subject to customary closing conditions, including regulatory approval, is expected to close in the fourth quarter of 2022. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the executive voice section with a column featuring Seth London. The headline, "He's Building a Foundation." Industry veteran Seth London leads LaChase Construction's efforts in the Triangle. This Q&A interview column was done by Cameron Snipes. Closer look, title organization, vice president, LaChase, age 45, education, bachelor's, construction, engineering, and management, MBA, NC State University. Family, wife Sarah, sons Andrew and Jack, daughter Emma Kate. First job in high school. First job was a soccer referee. As a second-generation construction professional with more than 25 years of industry experience under his belt, Seth London is now charged with leading the local efforts of LaChase Construction. He oversees the company's 85-person Southeast region and is responsible for expanding its business in the Triangle and beyond. The Triangle office is based in Durham and employs 70. In 2021 alone, the Triangle office had gross billings of $67.3 million. Tell us about LaChase Construction. We're a commercial construction firm that serves a variety of industries, and we work on projects ranging from simple renovations to new construction valued at over $250 million. LaChase was founded in 1944 in Rochester, New York, and today has more than 750 construction professionals in operations across the East Coast. The company entered the North Carolina market in 1999 and established a Durham office via the acquisition of C.C. Woods Construction Company in 2005. LaChase then strengthened its presence here in 2016 by purchasing the Triangle Charlotte operations of Lendlease Americas Incorporated. Today, we have about 85 local employees, and we operate as the LaChase Southeast Region. And we serve clients in a variety of markets, including life sciences, education, healthcare, commercial, and multifamily sectors. In addition to offering construction services, we also have a development arm that looks for opportunities to partner with our clients on select projects. And as we're running out of time, we'll switch to the question, what are your goals for LaChase? In the short term, I want to build more local recognition for our brand. Our clients know and respect us, and we are recognized in certain sectors of the industry, but we want to be more visible for our work and for our involvement in the community. Long term, and it's all about growth. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we run out of time for today's episode. Hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.